Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. Can I just get a thumbs up that you can hear me well from someone? Thank you, John. Thank you, David. Thank you, David. Thank you, Joanne. We're slowly getting everybody here. I am testing yet another setup on my end. Been struggling to be able to get a good recording out of these coffee hours that are going to be featured on the Digital Trailblazer community that I will slowly be launching over the next month. Those of you who have already signed up through the URL starcao.com/coffee, you're already getting access to my newsletter and the 1.0 version of my community. I'm going to start sending out invites to the 2.0 community site as early as next week. So if you have not signed up yet, please go to starcio.com/coffee. You'll get my newsletter. You'll get access to the 1.0 site. And I'm slowly going to be adding people to the 2.0 site. And one of the features is access to these recordings. So if you miss an episode, you'll be able to join and listen in afterwards. So just one of the things. And I'll slowly be telling you more about it as we go on. But today's episode is about culture transformation, turning around a jaded, demoralized department. I forget exactly how this came up. We've had a number of conversations here about high performance teams. In fact, the article I'm working on right now for CIO is around the CIO's role in cultivating high performance teams, including some remarks from that episode that Joanne, and others. John, I feature some of your comments in that article that I'm working on this morning. Today is actually a reminder of how hard it is to cultivate high performance to teams and the types of things that can happen in the course of business that create jaded and demoralized departments. I woke up this morning, as many of you do, looking at the headlines, as there were two major issues last night, one involving Microsoft Azure and one involving CrowdStrike, both created outages in transportation, in airlines, in banks, in point of sale systems. I heard a story this morning that the point of sale systems at Starbucks were down, and the only way you could pay for your coffee was through your mobile app, which is so ironic. So you think about the teams working at Microsoft and CrowdStrike through those issues. I also think about the issues of every SOC and every NOC. This is the Network Operations Center, the Security Operations Center, who are just dealing with the aftermath of this issue. And I'm told the CrowdStrike one in particular isn't an easy roll back and fix. And there's some complicated instructions on how to go about doing this. And obviously, we're talking about mission critical systems. Now, when I created the topic, I think Martin was the one who actually suggested this one. I wasn't talking necessarily about a single incident. I mean, this can happen to any group, any company at any given time that you're hit with an unexpected crisis. The business is looking at you to perform, to turn things around. You're on a time clock. There's a lot of stress to deal with this. What I was really referring to about turning around a jaded and demoralized department is really one that's more systemic. And many of us have walked into organizations that have been through so much being beaten down, so much downtrodden. Organization doesn't care about their well-being. They've struggled to perform for any number of reasons for a long period of time. And it's sort of this cyclical downhill feeling for these groups, right? The more they are underperforming, at the same time, their organization leaders are seeing what's happening in the market with digital transformation, with technology, with AI, their expectations are increasing. That's where the demoralization comes into play. They could be understaffing them or reducing staff with them. They could be underinvesting in their learning. And so it's sort of a self-promise that ends up happening, that as they underperform, they become more jaded, they become more demoralized. And then all of a sudden you come into this situation, you're like, I got to turn this around. I can't become a better digital trailblazer, or I can't start impacting our digital transformation goals or improving our delivery or changing our service model until I address the culture of this department and start improving on it. So Joanne, thank you for joining me here today on this journey. We're going to try to give everybody some tips around this. And Joe, I want to start with you today. Maybe help everybody sense the signs of an inflection point. You know, there's just, you know, some departments where, you know, culture and collaboration improvements are needed, maybe a little bit more forcefully. Those are things that I think need to be in the continuous improvement cycles. And those that are already in the red zone, you could sense that people are unhappy. They're looking in the back of the room when you're speaking to them, their arms are folded. They think that whatever management's going to put in front of them will come and pass, and they will get shut down again with their ideas. So, you know, tell me what that inflection point looks like to you when you work into a department and says, this is really a jaded department. I need to work on the culture as a program first before I even start focusing on how they're operating. Hello, Joe.
So, Isaac, as you know, my personal brand is Chaos to Order, and it was born out of 5 consecutive engagements as the first most senior IT leader in a number of companies. And it's interesting that you ask a couple of questions, the difference between a department that just needs to be more collaborative or have its culture improved versus one that has been jaded or totally demoralized. I have faced all of those different situations. 4 of the 5 were in one of those 2 categories. One was just no corporate IT department. I built it from scratch, which was a different exercise. But it was readily apparent. I'll go back to my first role as the most senior IT leader in an organization. I was invited after doing a consulting study, which concluded that basically the department had no internal communication among its members. And there was no communication from the existing director to the rest of the organization. So they were totally disconnected internally and externally. I pointed that out, and I was invited to come and fix it as the first or the new head of IT there. So in another situation, the director had been in charge of the department for almost 2 decades and had started out as basically the AS400 programmer and retained 100% of the decision-making. Again, poor communication between the department itself and the rest of the organization. And everyone within the department, because they were unable to accomplish very many missions, they were totally demoralized by that. And so that was another situation that caused that situation to occur.
So, Joe, lack of communications internally and externally are certainly signs that they're working in an island. That could be a symptom and an area to focus on. I also do think, you know, you brought up the person on the AS400. I do think hero cultures are a symptom of a jaded, demoralized department, right? When the group has to focus on one person who can solve a specific problem or has a specific skill set or hoards knowledge around something. That can be particularly demoralizing when teams have to collaborate on solutions today. And both of those things, I think leaders have to focus on.
So, I would say on my top list, number one is almost always communication, right? Communication within and between the department and the rest of the organization. The second is relationships. There was in both of the cases I cited, as in a couple of the others, the relationship between the department and the rest of the organization, between the department head and the rest of the organization was nil. Third, and we haven't talked about this yet, is empowerment. In the case of the programmer turned director, none of the other members of the department had any decision-making capabilities under her direction. She was basically the last word all the time. And so they were stifled. Lastly, there's the issue, as always, of having responsibility without authority. As a leader, you don't have the authority to make these changes, to make decisions, to have an impact. You're doomed to failure. So those are just some of the points.
Lack of empowerment and decision authorities, I think, are definitely good things to be focusing on. Joanne, welcome to the floor. Your thoughts on today's news, if you want to go there, and then about Jaden and demoralized departments.
The outages are incredible in terms of their scale, but only a tip of the iceberg. If you're affected, you have my deepest empathy and sympathy. It also kind of makes every IT leader in the world sort of sit back and say, five nines, seven nines, where's my failover? Where's my backup? Why am I single cloud? I need to duplicate and replicate and all that kind of stuff, or find ways around it, I should say. But that being said, and these would be probably the most demoralized and jaded departments today, not only within Microsoft, but also within CrowdStrike. One of the points that you drew, Isaac, was around the inflection point. And I would say that, you know, lots of people put out surveys and they find their ways to sort of get the pulse of their organizations. But one of the things that they don't necessarily look at, which I have always found is a good sort of trace line, is as you're producing code, regardless of the method that you're using, how much more QA errors are being found before it gets promoted to production? And that's always been a very good indicator to me that if those incident rates go up, people are not feeling it. They're not happy. They're likely it's not just about collaboration. It's about the fact that they're burned out. And that's a very big sign for absenteeism and being jaded. And so I would say, you know, you don't have to do a survey to find the pulse. And even if you are very good at reading people and you want some quantifiable metrics of why you want to change things, that's one of the ways. Just go back to the SDLC and find how many more incidents there are, how many tickets are coming in around certain things, and you'll be able to sort of hone in on what's really bothering people. How to change that, of course, is a different story. And yes, chocolate does figure into the equation, but it's really creating an environment that acknowledges that there is discontent and that there is higher absentee rates. People are not happy. And really asking them point blank, what is it that we can do to make you happier? And that level of empowerment, to Joe's point, is something that I think people may not tell you exactly what it is, but it does make them feel better just to be asked.
So, Joanne, I love your answer that it's the answer is in the data, because that's something that that I do, but I didn't actually reflect on. I wasn't always looking at defects. I think that's a good one. I think the one that always caught my attention was with agile teams and just whether they were estimating or not, what was their ability to complete versus what they were committing to? And, with an agile team, you're giving them empowerment around what to commit to. You're not trying to get them to commit to 30 things. You're listening to the team and saying, what can you commit to this sprint? And then you're trusting them to come back and do their best efforts to meet those objectives. And so if they're missing their commitments, there's probably something where they're either undercommitting or overcommitting for different reasons. And there just isn't that sense of ownership that drive that Joe calls called out in the episode we had around high performance. There isn't that drive. And if there isn't that drive, all the things that can go wrong inside a sprint peak up and they become, detractors, they become issues for them to be able to complete their work. Joanne, and I'm going to bring Dave, Tyler, and John in that order.
Sure. Sorry. I just wanted to say that, you know, the trusting the team to self-manage and to make the right levels of commitment can also be a bit of a double-edged sword, because outside pressures onto the team, as well as inside IT pressures on the teams, sometimes push that level of commitment beyond what the actual deliverable level is. So they feel empowered to commit, but they can't, and then they start going down that rabbit hole and spiral. And it's because, you know, the business might be putting pressure on individuals in certain teams without IT leadership even knowing about it, just by osmosis, because the business wants to be involved. They're looking for their deliverable, their on time and on budget commitments, all that kind of stuff. And so a lot of times you have a bit of a crossover that you really have to investigate a little bit to make sure that the team who is not delivering, that they're not being pressured into overcommitment from the outside.
Completely agree. Let's bring in some diverse opinions here. Let's get David in. David, thoughts on turning around a jaded, demoralized department, how you identify them, and you have a security background. Any thoughts on today's news today?
Yeah, well, on that topic, I have to say, and I dropped a post on this, I feel that a lot of misinformation is being assumed to be fact. So, you know, that's the first thing, right? You know, before we go broadly broadcasting what's wrong, we better have some facts, good measures to say, hey, this is what's wrong. From the CrowdStrike side, you know, their CEOs come right out and said, hey, we had an update on our agent on Windows systems that caused some very bad things to occur, and we have a fix for it. But as Joanne pointed out, following that fix on some of the Windows systems is not as easy done as said. Yeah. So, yeah. And the other thing I'll say as a security guy, you know, putting patches into production first, really bad idea, right? If you don't have production-like environments that do your, if you will, regression testing against, you know, known good, right? Test-driven. Then you're not a real 5 or 6, 9, 7, 9 kind of company. You know, because if anyone who tested that CrowdStrike patch in a non-prod would have gotten the blue screen of death, and they would have known not to promote it to production. So anyway, and it's, you know, I make it maybe sound simple, but the idea of automated promotion of patches, especially with a tool like CrowdStrike that has its own patch mechanisms, maybe not as easily done as I made it sound, but you got to do it, right? All the complex information systems that we operate only become more complex as we integrate them. And CrowdStrike is a complex system. Windows is a complex system. They run on, you know, in collaboration. It's an exponential complexity. But I do want to get back on topic and say, hey, look, what we have in this particular incident is urgency, right? And so whenever you want to turn around a jaded organization, first you need a sense of urgency, right? I am motivated for change, okay? And once you have that sense of urgency, then you need to build momentum, right? A coalition, a group, stakeholders in the vision. And as has been said by all the speakers up to this point, Communication is key. Okay. So, and this is a progression, right? It's not an accident. You don't just stumble into transforming, turning around broken organizations. So communication, now let's drill into that a little bit. There are two worlds of communication in my mind. The first is a problem language. Problem language is the first indicator of an organization that is broken, demoralized, if you will. If all they want to do is talk about the problem or use language that empowers a problem, that's not helpful. It's easy to pick it out, and it's very useful in the solutioning of a turnaround. The other side of that coin is solution language. So the leaders that envision a future state, a target state, have to have good articulation of value in achieving that target state. And I'll give you the anecdote. I'm a Lean Six black belt, trained, certified, saved hundreds of millions of dollars, quote unquote. But I found it interesting that communicators, people, right? Guys that are smooth and good listeners, good communicators, were achieving equal results to mine while I'm doing all the science, right? I'm doing the math and all the data, but all they did was use solution language to describe the outcome as it was adopted by the target organization. The problem went away all by itself. And then I'll release the talking stick with this. Joe and Joanne both touched on an interesting topic. I don't want to quote them, but I want to give it a different name: bully culture. Okay. So an early indicator in my mind of an organization that's moving towards demoralized is that they're permissive of bullies. And the definition of bully is actually very interesting. I had to look it up about 8 months ago and then refined it a little bit for the IT world. But the idea that an individual intends harm, affects harm, and prevents remediation of that harm, that's bully, right? And so you have a programmer who becomes a director and they bully their department. This is really bad. You got to fix it, right? That's the root cause. You're never going to get beyond problem language if everyone feels as though they're being subjugated by a bully, right? Targeting, another aspect of bullying. So anyway, point being, there are two modes of communication: problem language, solution language. You need that impetus, a trigger, crisis, whatever you want to call it. Have a good vision of where you're trying to go, build coalitions, get the solution language out there, and measure for adoption, if you will.
Dave, great, really good advice here for anybody taking notes. Really like the point around making sure you're starting with the motivation factor. It's hard to really change without that. And I made a note here so that we don't keep going into this thread of two other topics we'll cover in a future episode. One on handling a crisis. And I'm not just talking about a security crisis or an operations one. We'll also cover branding in there as well. So we'll fork this conversation over to another one and have a topic just dedicated toward that. And then another one that you brought up, Dave, I think this is interesting, what I'll call automation red flags. We're under tremendous pressure to be automating more of what we're doing. And yes, one of those areas is to accept the auto patching system in our Windows and pretty much everything that we're doing. And, this one's going to create a lot of discussion about, what's the right level of risk and trust and where is testing needed. So, Dave, thank you for bringing that up. I want to bring Tyler and John in. Tyler, I think you were here first. Your thoughts on turning around a jaded, demoralized department, your signs that you're working with a team that really needs to focus on changing that culture first.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Isaac. I guess Wow. Did the previous speakers have covered the ground very well. So I'll try to add something that hasn't been spoken about yet. And that's process maturity as a symptom of dysfunction. So I don't think anybody has brought that up yet. But that's really important to look at, you know, in terms of a data point that, you know, as you're coming into a new organization and seeing where things are. I'll give you an example. So change management, for example, if they don't have a good set of governance around change management, oftentimes that's a symptom that your bullies and your heroes. I like that there's an interesting connection between those two different types of plays, where you can be an information hoarder but not a bully, and you can be a bully, and there's combinations thereof. But a lot of times you'll see that manifest itself in process or lack of process maturity around things like change management, because if there's no maturity around change management, then that lets these folks go off and do whatever it is they like. So that reduces the oversight. So you've got people that are, you know, attempting to dominate or attempting to protect themselves with information that work against that. So I think that's a really important thing that, you know, in combination with all of the other things, like establishing the vision, you know, people, they want their lives to be impactful. They want their work to matter. And establishing that vision using some of the approaches that David and Joe and Joanne and you, Isaac, have mentioned is really, really important for them to start to feel impactful. But then they also need to be protected from the bullies and the heroes. And one of the first things you can do to do that is to institute more governance around your change management.
Tyler, I think what you're bringing up is not just isolated to change management. I see it with Agile and DevOps. In the Agile terms, I see, you know, you bring a department with 200 people and ask 20 of them, what does Agile mean in the organization? And you get 20 different answers. Or you talk about the same thing around DevOps. What are we focusing on DevOps? And everybody has a different stack and a different way of implementing and different priorities around what they're trying to accomplish from a DevOps perspective. Any of those disciplines can lead to that. The other one I also think about, Tyler, is this culture of firefighting. Right. Yeah. Whatever the latest SEV1 is drawing everybody to it. And obviously, when there's something like today, and it's truly a SEV1, you need this. But one of my clear signs is, you know, if everybody is involved in incident management, guess what? Nobody's involved in innovation. No one's involved in changing the environment and growing. So that's, you bring up a really good point, but I think it's actually pretty broad of a problem. I'll let you comment on that and go to John.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It is broader than that. I figured I'd start with just the change management. but the firefighting culture, so that you make an excellent point there, and that goes back to communication and vision, because nothing is more demoralizing than doing your job and having zero downtime. And the doofus that caused downtime gets the accolade because they fixed the problem that they caused in the first place. So as a leader, you've got to be really, really focused on communicating and making sure that, you know, hey, this system that was experiencing downtime before, this team came in and addressed it and make sure they're the ones getting the rewards and accolades and not the firefighters.
I agree with that, Tyler. We're going to cover more on that on the operational crisis episode. John, welcome to the floor. I want to get one more input on turning around a jaded, demoralized department. What have you seen as an indicator that you've got some work to do?
Hi, Isaac. Thank you. I look at these type of problems as leadership problems, right? And so, on the just trying to see if we have this, like, get on video calls with people at all level, like, and just watch people when they talk to you. And where I really, really have seen this is on failed acquisitions. And then when companies have like the IT group has really kind of changed its mission from like building new IT products to just like keeping the lights on, and where their missions change. And so, like, since I view these both as like leadership problems, go talk to the leaders at all level, and go talk to the people that are working with the IT group, go talk to the business stakeholders, and that'll give you a sense of kind of like where what you're seeing from people like the IT group, like how they're doing. And you can definitely just see this on the video calls when you're interacting with people, and then see how the stakeholders talk to them and see how the upper leadership talk to them. And I found that really insightful. And a lot of times it's just like when you start looking at the leadership of like these poor people that are in this organization, it's just really clear that, like, in order to make things better, you got to get a lot of better. You got to figure out where the leadership problem is, and so you can start going after that.
John, can you comment on one area of this? Because, you know, I know you work as a service provider. One of the areas I've seen a lot of stress and that could lead to a jaded, demoralized department is this us versus them mentality when working with a service provider. You got the internal team that wants to do everything themselves or wants to do more themselves or is throwing the service provider under the bus for all these things. And then, you know, on the service provider side, they're coming in with all the right intentions, sometimes maybe a little bit overboard on being the smartest people in the room. That can happen. But, you know, if we don't have the right co-creation, the right co-model with a service provider and an IT team, it's going to create a jaded, demoralized department. Any thoughts around that?
Yes, absolutely. The first thing that you have to do is make sure that every team has really clear responsibilities of what they're doing. And so they're not stepping on each other's toes. And I personally have been in some really weird situations. Like I ran corporate functions, IT, record to report. And so like there was for some reason, the director that ran that at Microsoft got maybe put into a new position or something. And overnight that was open. So I got called to run that function for a year. And so I was actually working at Accenture that time. And then all the people were from another consulting company. It was like it was really weird for them to have a different, you know, like their competitor basically running their org, right? And so what's really important is that the people that are in charge have to make sure that, like, the important thing is everyone gets along and that there's no bad behavior, right? And so it's like, it's okay to have different groups working with each other, but the roles and responsibilities have to be really clear. And then you have to make it clear to people that there's going to be no bad behavior tolerated. And then, you know, it's okay. Like, you can't treat people as second class citizens. We're all going towards the same direction. And the only way that we're going to do this is if we're working together and cooperating.
More leadership responsibilities there.
Yeah.
When we come back from the break, we'll continue this discussions around turning around a jaded department and demoralized department. And then my other question that we've already touched on, handling some of the tough situations with individuals when driving a turnaround. We talked about bullies. We also talked about heroes. I agree. I think Tyler said, you know, you could have some people that are both and some that are individual. Heather, if you're in a position to join us, I'd love to have you up in here because, you know, one of the things I know leaders do is try to use hiring and use partnering as a way to bring some new eyes and new perspectives into departments. That is definitely something I'd love to hear your opinion on if you could join us on stage. If not, we will bring you up another time. Thank you, everybody, for joining this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. We meet every single week, Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. We speak about the issues, opportunities, learning activities for those of you leading digital transformation initiatives in your organizations or aspiring to. And today's our culture transformation topic. We try to do one of these every 4 to 6 weeks. It's really a discussion around leadership. I thank everyone for joining us this week. Let me tell you about our upcoming episodes on the 26th, Accelerating Transformation, PMO's Role in AI and Driving Innovation. I think Liz is listening in here. I shared one of her articles this week around the role of project management I'm hoping she will join us on stage for this one. I think Sandy McCarron is here also. I'm hoping she will join us on stage. We'll be talking about PMO's role. We're talking about PMO's role today, oddly enough. August 2nd, we will be talking about cultivating digital trailblazers, preparing for an executive interview. I think this will be important for any of you getting ready to gear up for another round of job searching in the fall and into the winter. We'll be sharing some tips about how to interview, but also how to get ready for the interview. So our upcoming two topics, I shared with everybody a bunch of links today in the comments for some articles I've recently written and others on this topic, including Liz's recent article. And I shared you a bunch of other links, including the link to my community that's getting its 2.0 launch over the next couple months. It's starcio.com/coffee that will get you access to the existing community, the 1.0 site. And I will start inviting new people into the new community as early as this week. So I hope you, if you have not signed up there, please do sign up. You'll be on the early list to get access. I want to start with Heather since I invited her up. Thank you for joining, Heather. Your thoughts on jaded departments, but also, like, you know, how should a leader think about using hiring as a way to change the equation around in their departments?
Thank you, Isaac. I think some of the comments that particularly Joanne made about, you know, how you want to avoid burnout and you want to make sure that you have that the leadership cares about individuals, but you can't do this once you have a problem. You can't wait for the crisis to happen and say, oh, what happened and why did it happen? So you have to make sure that this is a pervasive experience, that the employee experience is so positive, that you're attracting talent that is going to contribute in a positive way and to bring the employee engagement, whether it's mental health services or the benefits that are offered, the part-time work, the hybrid work, whatever. But these are all things that contribute to avoiding a jaded and demoralized staff. When you are looking to hire, if you can promote the skill, the services and the benefits that you offer, that's one of the ways that you're going to attract positive, strong talent. You want people that are not the same old. You want the people that are going to bring the new attitude and the new perspective to your organization. So you have to have a roadmap, an HR roadmap that says, this is what we're looking to do. This is how we're going to do it. And these are the things that we want to have so that we can avoid burnout. We can avoid jaded behavior. We can avoid problems before they happen. That's always the goal. I've been recruiting for a senior quality role. And yes, in healthcare, having quality as an oversight is very important. But there's a trend toward getting away from policing to getting to a quality culture. And so you want to have a culture that is positive all the way around so that you don't end up with problems and you can avoid them so you don't have to mitigate them because they didn't happen in the first place.
Heather, I'm glad you brought up the burnout factor because that's another side to this. It's, you know, we think of jaded, demoralized teams as underperforming teams for various reasons, but there's also teams that have been performing, maybe high performance teams that have just never been given a break. And either from their own drive or from the drive of the business to continue to perform. And certainly burnout is something to be looking for. Liz, thank you for joining us. We're talking about jaded departments. We're talking about how to turn them around. Open floor. What do you want to contribute to the conversation?
100%. So, I mean, that's a perfect segue because you were talking about underperforming versus and also folks who are burnt out. In my experience, it's the teams that feel like they can't win. They just feel like they can't win. And so you got to figure out how to get them to the point where it's clear that they're winning, either by changing what their commitments are or figuring out how to celebrate the little things or whatever. I remember going taking over a project that had gone sideways. So one of the things that PMO Whisperer is famous for is rescuing projects that go sideways. And this team was a mess. And I was talking to one of my fellow leaders and he said, oh, we just need to take these guys out for drinks. And I said, nothing helps a team's morale like success. Getting guys some wins, I don't mean just guys and girls, but figuring out how to craft a win, and a win that the team, not only the team feels like is a win for them, but also a team that the leadership can see also is a win. So throwing that out there.
Liz, I love how you just simplify this team. You know, they can't win. And it's very easy to just pick up that vibe. There's obviously a number of factors that that are the underlying source and root cause of that kind of problem. But it's a really just very simple way of thinking and feeling about it. I'm going to circle back. Let's go back to Joanne and Joe. Joanne, I know you've got a bunch of recipes up your sleeve for handling these issues. Love to hear some of your tricks beyond chocolate for turning around a jaded, demoralized team.
Well, one of the things that I started to develop over a period of time was to make sure that in the planning process for any big initiative, regardless of whether it's digital transformation or, you know, a system changeover or, you know, lift and shift to cloud, whatever it is that will encompass a large group of people in the organization, at the earliest point of ideation, start planning the what I would call the empathy exercises, the way you show people value, how you demonstrate they are, that not only is their work valuable to the organization, but you value them as people. And the more of those that you can put in, not on a weekly basis necessarily, but on a very frequent basis, little team building exercises, you know, oh, today lunch has been delivered by, and it's a different business unit, to show not only that you as a leader appreciate your group, but that they are relevant to the other parts of the organization. And it's not so much about creating cross collaboration for the initiative as much as building bridges and putting out little feelers and tentacles all over the organization so that everybody realizes that even the smallest agile team in a big IT group should be recognized for their accomplishments, whether it's they were on time or even if they were 2 weeks late, they put the effort in. And those little things add up over a period of time and help to dissuade the idea that, you know, we can't win no matter what we do, which is a very, very valid argument. A lot of times teams feel that way. But if you start the planning process by incorporating human in the loop, using your empathy, using your creativity, your entrepreneurial skills, any of the five E's, you're going to create a better environment for all the teams.
Thank you, Joanne. Joe, before we bring you in, Heather, I see you went off. Do you want to jump in on that? And then we'll let Joe.
Yes, thank you. Two things. I think what Joanne is saying, you know, that lunch is sponsored by this one or that team, but sometimes just doing it for no reason, saying that today we're having lunch, period, end of story. There's absolutely no hidden agenda. We're just going to feed you and nourish your soul. Another example you had mentioned about that people feel that they can't win. I have a candidate that I'm working with, and she said that her team, no matter what they did, they weren't getting it right. So what did she do? She went with them to a conference. She saw what they were doing, and she said, aha, now I see what the problem is. Sometimes you have to roll up your sleeves and look at it not from above, but at the same level as the team to figure out what the problem is. Because the way you approach it as a leader may be completely different than the doers. So I think that that really is very helpful.
Thank you, Heather. Joe, your next trick beyond communications, what else are you doing?
my mind is reeling with all of these great thoughts from a number of different people. I mean, Joanne, it struck a chord with me with the term value. You have to make sure that you let your demoralized group, every individual there, know that you value them, that they are important, that their opinion matters. You want to hear what they have to say. I can't tell you how many times I've held a staff meeting and nobody wants to say anything because they've been so crushed that they're afraid to speak. You've got to pull that out of them. Trust and respect. These are things you don't just get. You have to earn it. Your team has to trust that you have their back, that you are the face of IT when you're talking to the rest of the senior management team. You're the only one they see at the management meetings and at the conferences, at the strategy sessions. You know, you are the voice of the department. You want to let your staff know that you're speaking for them, that you are their advocate, that you have a vision for what this department can be, and they and we together are going to get there. You sense I have a passion about this. This is really the core of what I've done a number of times. And the final point, I think Liz brought this up. I never ask anybody to undertake anything or to do anything that I'm not willing to do myself. Roll up your sleeves and sit down next to the individual or drag the individual. I took a guy down to, I think I've told the story about taking somebody down to the plant floor. Been with the company for 7 years, had no idea how the manufacturing process worked. And I personally took him on a tour of the plant and explained how things work. So you need to invest your time to earn their trust, earn their respect, respect them and their views and their opinions, coach them, and pull them out of that funk. And the final point is success. I forget who said it, but a big success, there's nothing like a big success that you can tout to say this department is not a bunch of losers. We're a bunch of winners.
Thanks, Joe. I do have a question I'm hoping you can answer, and then we'll bring Jason into the conversation. Joe, we talked about bullies and we talked about heroes. There's another one, you know, sort of persona that I see that comes up, and I would just call them downers, right? Yep. Lack of belief, almost borderline depressed. Although let's just assume not clinically depressed for this conversation, it's that person that is sort of a magnet. It's, you know, if they're vocal, they're going to create that persona and extend it out to their team and to the department. I don't want to go down the path of if they're that bad, we have to move them out or put them in a different situation. I've seen this happen in departments where they may be unioned. They may be people who have been with the organization for a very long time. So, Joe, what do you do when you have a downer in the group and that's part of demoralizing the department?
Wow. Well, bad apple syndrome is a very real thing. And if you remove the option of removing the bad apple from the barrel, then the best you can do is try to engage that individual in formal training. There are all kinds of programs to bring people's level of professionalism up. You may have to make that individual a sole contributor, sort of isolate them from the rest of the group, maybe show that the rest of the group is doing well and you can be a part of this if you can, you know, pull yourself out of the funk. At the end of the day, though, and by the way, I am very guilty of prolonging the pain. At the end of the day, if there's someone who is just not performing or worse than not performing, pretending to perform and bringing the group down, and people know it, because trust me, people know it when there's someone in the group who's faking it and not really doing the work, you have to find a way to displace that individual.
Thank you, Joe. Let's bring Jason in. And then I know John had a comment on my question. So Jason, welcome to the floor. What do you have to share with us today?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Great. Yeah. So I've been through in a previous organization, this kind of change from a functioning culture to one that I refer to as the Camelot years, when everything was, you know, just firing on all cylinders and everybody was in line, to one that when that leadership changed out with a new group of leaders, absolutely tanked. And it got so bad that the leadership had to be replaced. So I've seen a lot here. And, you know, from my experience, you know, I would characterize culture as it's a leadership responsibility. You know, if you lead in this area, it has to be intentional. You have to do something. You have to realize that you need to build a culture. You need to cultivate that culture. That's part of the leadership role. If you do nothing, then it kind of maybe grows on its own. Then you get a fractured environment where you have teams that create their own culture. Because at some level of leadership, whether it's at the executive level or down at the managerial level, it's gonna happen. Teams are gonna come together. In that intent, that culture that you want to create, it must be known. Everybody must be aware of what it is we are trying to accomplish as a team. In my experience, we had brought in a consultant and a very good consultant. His name is Chris Laping. He used to be CTO.
I know Chris.
You know Chris?
I know him well.
and I still talk to him too. You know, Chris is just an awesome guy. And his book, People Before Things, and his workbook is, you know, one we went through. And that really helped to set the stage. You know, it wasn't that our leadership was, you know, of the organization was, you know, demanding or saying, this is what we're going to be. This was like, we're reaching outside of ourselves. We're going outside of ourselves to find an expert to help us define our culture. And in that, it brought everybody together. You know, it really did, because it was an us thing and not, you know, top down. So I think that did a lot in this organization. It was promoted. You know, you have to promote your culture. You know, you promote your culture through communications. We would have quarterly, town halls in which we'd bring in guest speakers to talk about those things, the aspects of culture. We also, in the hiring process, we had to define, well, what is it that what kind of employee are we looking for? Who is that team player? And a couple months ago, I suggested a couple books. One was one of those Patrick Lencioni books, Ideal Team Player. And our leadership groups went through that book, but it's a really good one just to kind of, you know, define, well, what is a good team player? Who are we looking for? And in the hiring process, we're able to find those, you know, to ask questions, intelligent questions, to kind of like suss out those characteristics. And then, after, you know, in this process, you know, team building events, you know, I sent my team to several conferences. It did a lot to build esprit de corps, you know, they're also their knowledge. You know, we wanted to train people. We wanted people to be smart. You know, the comment was, and this was in higher ed, right? So, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of money, so we wanted to treat people to stay, you know, train them to leave, but treat them to stay, you know. And we had, during those Camelot years, I'd say, you know, retained a lot of great talent. I won't tell you the story about how it, you know, went south, but certainly I've seen, you know, what the opposite of that does when you have a bully. And I think somebody mentioned having a bully in there. When you stick a bully in that pulpit at the top and they have a completely different attack, you've trained a culture that works, a team, an organization that works well. If you bring in that leader who just does not share that mentality or share that perspective, it will fall apart real fast. That's all I can say. But it has to be intentional, and it's, like I said, it's a leadership responsibility.
Thank you, Jason. John, I know you had something you wanted to add.
Yeah, but my friends and I, we talked about the dilemma of knowing where the bodies are. And so, like, the CEO asks somebody that's been there a while that knows where the bodies are, and they're going to be like, oh, that's hard. That change is hard, right? And then CEO asks the new person that's yet, like the yes person, right? And they're like, okay, I'll go do it, CEO. And so, like, if you're in an organization and you see somebody that's resistant to change, make sure you at least go talk to that person and find out where all the bodies are, right? And find out why everything's hard, right? And then you can start building a plan to go achieve the objectives that you have and overcome the challenges before you move that person out.
Thank you, John. We have a few seconds left before I close. Liz and then Tyler.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. Like, you want to make sure that you define what is a bad apple.
Because if you have somebody who is just a curmudgeon, it could be because they have a tremendous amount of experience. And that means that you could actually figure out how to bring them on side, right? And could be extremely valuable, which is very different than a bad apple who is a poor performer, right? So just food for thought.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of actually really strong performers who are not heroes, not bullies, but man, they were struggling to, you know, be positive and be a positive and inspiration to their teammates. And it's, you know, that kind of, you know, when you can perform, but you're not inspiring, it can be a real problem. Tyler, your quick thoughts.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a quick little anecdote about something that happened earlier in my career. I was at Hewlett-Packard during the HP Compaq merger. And one of the things that was interesting is that when the Compaq executive team came into the company, their sales organization was very hierarchical, which is, you know, you're not supposed to reach out directly to your boss's boss, or your direct reports. Direct reports aren't supposed to reach out to you, which is, if you've read the HP Way and you know the whole culture of Hewlett-Packard back in the day, you would know that they had something called management by walking around, which meant that everybody was empowered to communicate both horizontally and vertically across the organization. And, you know, as you're trying to turn around a demoralized team, it's really important to make sure that you are facilitating the communications of your team across the organization, both horizontally and vertically. That if some other leader is attempting to control who someone talks to under what context, that's a sure sign of a bully. So you can really turn around that team by taking the shackles off and giving them the freedom to communicate, and then the means to do so, like Joe's example of actually taking somebody down to the floor, you know, introducing them to some of the plant folks and fostering learning and relationship building.
Thank you, Tyler. I'm going to give Dave the last word here. He's been waiting patiently. David, your last thoughts on the topic today. You're on mute. I know he had his last thought here. Okay. David, who's next? Joanne?
You know, I would say one of the things as leaders that we really need to do is not develop a sixth sense necessarily, but be able to look at the interpersonal dynamic among the team members across all the different teams. And to the point that was made about giving people a voice, you know, one of the things that we also have to take on as leaders is the role of mentor. And sometimes the curmudgeon, to Liz's point, or the bad apple, or the person who is, you know, was a really high performing person and suddenly demoralizes the whole team, is because there's something else going on, something else at play. So that interpersonal dynamic between the team members themselves, pay attention to it. You know, I always tried to build my teams in subgroups, you know, where people had commonality, whether it was they had new babies or small children or whatever the paradigm was that brought them together, and then leverage that to try and introduce it into the larger part of the culture. And by doing that, it also meant finding mentors for them in other parts of the business, because everyone needs a leg up, no matter what level you are. The term manage up didn't come out of the blue. We all have to do up, down, and sideways. And the more foresight we have around that, I think the better off we will be in helping our teams not become demoralized.
Thank you, Joanne and Joe, Heather, John, Tyler, Liz, Jason, David, and I have a feeling I'm missing somebody who dropped off before. Is Tyler still here? Yeah, he's still here. If I miss somebody, thank you to everybody who joined, listened, and participated in our conversation today around turning around a jaded and demoralized department. We'll be speaking next week, July 26th, on accelerating transformation, the PMO's role in AI and driving innovation. We'll be talking August 2nd on cultivating digital trailblazers, preparing for an executive interview. We'll cover both sides of that. And I'll be announcing the rest of August topics around that time. Just a reminder, if you have not joined the 1.0 version of the Digital Trailblazer community, please do so. I will be announcing the 2.0 version beginning next week and over the next 4 to 8 weeks. I want to be able to give you early access to it. Please sign up at starcio.com/coffee, and you'll be on the list to get early access to the site. Everybody, have a great weekend. If you're fighting through this week's operational issues, our empathy goes out to you. And we'll be covering, again, that type of episode, handling an operational crisis, in a future episode. Everybody have a great weekend. See you next week.